portfolio. After 9 or 10 months, this should result in a portfolio of 20 to 30 stocks. For example, 7 stocks every 3 months, 5 or 6 stocks every 2 months. Step 6. Sell each stock after holding it for 1 year. For taxable accounts, sell winners after holding them a few days more than 1 year, and sell losers after holding them a few days less than 1 year, as previously described. Use the proceeds from any sale and any additional investment money to replace the sold companies with an equal number of new magic formula selections. Step 4. Step 7. Continue this process for many years. Remember, you must be committed to continuing this process for a minimum of 3 to 5 years, regardless of results. Otherwise, you will most likely quit before the magic formula has a chance to work. Step 8. Feel free to write and thank me. Option 2. General screening instructions. If using any screening option other than magicformulainvesting.com, you should take the following steps to best approximate the results of the magic formula. Use Return on Assets, ROA, as a screening criterion. Set the minimum ROA at 25%. This will take the place of return on capital from the magic formula study. From the resulting group of high ROA stocks, screen for those stocks with the lowest price-to-earning PE ratios. This will take the place of earnings yield from the magic formula study. Eliminate all utilities and financial stocks, that is, mutual funds, banks, and insurance companies, from the list. Eliminate all foreign companies from the list. In most cases, these will have the suffix ADR, for American Depository Receipt, after the name of the stock. If a stock has a very low PE ratio, say 5 or less, that may indicate that the previous year or the data being used are unusual in some way. You may want to eliminate these stocks from your list. You may also want to eliminate any company that has announced earnings in the last week. This should help minimize the incidence of incorrect or untimely data. After obtaining your list, follow steps 4 and 8 from the magicformulainvesting.com instruction page. Important notice. The following section is not required listening. To utilize the magic formula strategy successfully, you must understand only 2 basic concepts. First, buying good companies at bargain prices makes sense. On average, this is what the magic formula does. Second, it can take Mr. Market several years to recognize a bargain. Therefore, the magic formula strategy requires patience. The information that follows in this section is merely additional commentary on these 2 points. It compares the logic and results of the magic formula strategy with other studies and methods that have demonstrated an ability to beat the market. A random walk spoiled. For many years, academics have debated whether it's possible to find bargain-priced stocks other than by chance. This notion, sometimes loosely referred to as the random walk or efficient market theory, suggests that for the most part, the stock market is very efficient at taking in all publicly available information and setting stock prices. That is, through the interaction of knowledgeable buyers and sellers, the market does a pretty good job of pricing stocks at fair value. This theory, along with the failure of most professional managers to beat the market averages over the long term, both before and after management fees and expenses, has understandably led to the movement toward indexing, a cost-effective strategy designed to merely match the market's return. Of course, over the years, many studies have attempted to identify strategies that can beat the market, but these studies have often been criticized on numerous grounds. These include: Number 1. The study beat the market because the data used to select stocks weren't really available to investors at the time the selections took place, aka look-ahead bias. Number 2. The study was biased because the database used in the study had been cleaned up and excluded companies that later went bankrupt, making the study results look better than they really were, aka survivorship bias. Number 3. The study included very small companies that couldn't have been purchased at the prices listed in the database, and uncovered companies too small for professionals to buy. Number 4. The study did not outperform the market by a significant amount after factoring in transaction costs. Number 5. The study picked stocks that were in some way riskier than the market, and that's why performance was better. Number 6. The stock selection strategy was based on back-testing many different stock selection strategies until one was found that worked, aka data mining. Number 7. The stock selection strategies used to beat the market included knowledge gained from previous market-beating studies that was not available at the time the stock purchases were made in the study. Luckily, the magic formula study doesn't appear to have had any of these problems. A newly released database from Standard & Poor's CompuStat, called Point in Time, was used. This database contains the exact information that was available to CompuStat customers on each date tested during the study period. The database goes back 17 years, the time period selected for the magic formula study. By using only this special database, it was possible to ensure that no look-ahead or survivorship bias took place. Further, the magic formula worked for both small and large capitalization stocks, provided returns far superior to the market averages, and achieved those returns while taking on much lower risk than the overall market, no matter how that risk was measured. Consequently, small size, high transaction costs, and added risk do not appear to be reasonable grounds for questioning the validity of the magic formula results. As for data mining and using academic research not available at the time of stock selection, this did not take place either. In fact, the two factors used for the magic formula study were actually the first two factors tested. Simply, a high earnings yield combined with a high return on capital were the two factors we judged to be most important when analyzing a company before the magic formula study was conducted. In sum, despite its obvious simplicity and the usual objections, the magic formula appears to work. It works well even when compared to much more sophisticated strategies used in some of the best market-beating research completed to date. Yet, in one sense, the success of the magic formula strategy should not be a surprise. Simple methods for beating the market have been well known for quite some time. Many studies over the years have confirmed that value-oriented strategies beat the market over longer time horizons. Several different measures of value have been shown to work. These strategies include, but are not limited to, selecting stocks based upon low ratios of price to book value, price to earnings, price to cash flow, price to sales, and/or price to dividends. Similar to the results found in the magic formula study, these simple value strategies do not always work. However, measured over longer periods, they do. Though these strategies have been well documented over many years, most individual and professional investors do not have the patience to use them. Apparently, the long periods of underperformance make them difficult, and for some professionals, impractical, to implement. Another problem with these simple methods is that though they work well, they work far better with smaller and medium capitalization stocks than with larger stocks. This should not be surprising either. Companies that are too small for professionals to buy and that are not large enough to generate sufficient commission revenue to justify analyst coverage are more likely to be ignored or misunderstood. As a result, they are more likely to present opportunities to find bargain-priced stocks. This was the case in the Magic Formula study. The formula achieved the greatest performance with the smallest capitalization stock studied. However, this good performance cannot be reasonably attributed to a small cap effect because small capitalization stocks did not appreciably outperform large caps during the study period. Dividing our universe of stocks into deciles by market capitalization during the 17-year study period, the smallest 10% of stocks provided returns of 12.1%, while the largest 10% of stocks returned 11.9%. The next deciles were similarly close, 12.2% for the next smallest and 11.9% for the next largest. But the whole issue of whether small capitalization stocks outperform large capitalization stocks is not particularly relevant. It seems clear that there is a greater opportunity to find bargains, and overpriced stocks for that matter, in the small cap arena, both because there are more stocks to choose from, and because smaller stocks are more likely to be lightly analyzed, and as a result, more likely to be mispriced. In a sense, it is just easier for simple methods like price-to-book screens and the magic formula to find bargain stocks among these smaller capitalization stocks. However, where the magic formula parts ways with previous market-beating studies, whether simple or sophisticated, is that for larger stocks, market caps over $1 billion, the results for the magic formula remain incredibly robust. Other methods do not fare nearly as well. For example, during our study period, the most widely used measure to identify value in growth stocks, price-to-book value, did not discriminate particularly strongly between winners and losers for these larger stocks. The best-ranked decile of low price-to-book stocks, cheapest 10%, beat the worst-ranked decile of high price-to-book stocks, most expensive 10%, by only 2% per year. This is 13.72% for the lowest price-to-book decile to 11.51% for the highest price-to-book decile. The market average for this group was 11.64%. In comparison, the magic formula strategy did much better. The best-ranked decile of magic formula stocks, cheapest 10%, beat the worst-ranked decile, most expensive 10%, by over 14% per year on average during the 17-year study. The best decile returned 18.88%, the worst returned 4.66%, while the market average for this universe of over $1 billion stocks was 11.7%. In truth, this is not surprising. While having a low price relative to the historical cost of assets may be an indication that a stock is cheap, high earnings relative to price and to the historical cost of assets are much more direct measures of cheapness and should work better. Of course, these two factors are the ones used in the magic formula study. One of the most significant recent studies, conducted by Joseph Piotrowski at the University of Chicago, took price-to-book analysis one step further. Piotrowski observed that while low price-to-book stocks beat the market on average, less than half of the stocks selected following the strategy actually outperformed the market. By using simple and readily available accounting metrics, Piotrowski wondered whether he could improve the results of a generic price-to-book strategy. Piotrowski rated the top quintile of low price-to-book stocks, that is, the cheapest 20%, using 9 different measures of financial health. These included measures of profitability, operating efficiency, and balance sheet strength. The results over the 21-year study were spectacular, with one exception. For larger stocks, it didn't really work. For the largest one-third of stocks by market capitalization, the equivalent in the magic formula study to stocks with market capitalizations over approximately $700 million, the highest-ranked stocks on Piotrowski's 9-point scale did not significantly outperform the average low price-to-book stock. Though Piotrowski's lowest-ranked large-cap stocks did do poorly relative to other low price-to-book stocks, his ranking system selected a total of only 34 low-ranked stocks over 21 years. This is not surprising either. As already mentioned, it's just easier to find mispriced stocks among smaller and mid-capitalization issues. But this relative inability for market-beating methods to work with larger-cap stocks is not unique. Even very sophisticated market-beating strategies, while showing excellent results in general, do not fare nearly as well as the relatively simple magic formula in the large-cap universe, or in the small-cap universe. For example, some of the best work done to date on sophisticated factor models was completed by Robert Haugen and Nardin Baker. Professor Haugen actually started an advisory business based on the excellent results achieved in this groundbreaking paper. Essentially, instead of the two factors used in the magic formula strategy, Haugen developed a sophisticated model using 71 factors that supposedly help predict how stocks will do in the future. These 71 factors evaluate stocks based on risk, liquidity, financial structure, profitability, price history, and analysts' estimates. Based on a complicated weighting of all of these different factors, Haugen's model predicts future returns for each stock. Historical expected returns for the stocks in the 3,000-plus stock universe evaluated by Haugen's model have been posted on his website, covering the period from February 1994 through November 2004. We decided to test Haugen's model to see whether it worked for large capitalization stocks, those with a market capitalization over $1 billion in 2004 dollars. It did. The results were quite spectacular. Over this 10-plus year period, the market average for the large cap universe tested returned 9.38%. But buying the highest ranked stocks, best ranked decile, based on Haugen's 71-factor model, returned plus 22.98%. The lowest ranked stocks, worst ranked decile, actually lost 6.91%. This amounts to a spread of almost 30% between best and worst. This assumed that stocks were held for only 1 month and then re-ranked at the end of each month. Of course, though these results were great, the magic formula did better. Over the same 10-plus year period, the highest-ranked stocks, best-ranked decile, based on the magic formula two-factor model, returned plus 24.25%. The worst-ranked stocks, worst-ranked decile, lost 7.91%. This amounts to a spread from best to worst of over 32%. Though the results from the magic formula strategy were somewhat better and easier to achieve than the results from the 71-factor model used by Haugen, the performance of both methods was excellent and quite comparable. But here's the thing. Most people don't, and shouldn't, invest by buying stocks and holding them for only 1 month. Besides the huge amount of time, transaction costs, and tax expense involved, this is essentially a trading strategy, not really a practical long-term investment strategy. So what happens if we change our test and hold each portfolio for 1 year? Portfolios were purchased every month during the 10-year period, and each portfolio was held for 1 year. So more than 120 separate portfolios were tested for each strategy. Actually, something very interesting occurs. Haugen's 71-factor model still does well. The best-ranked decile returns plus 12.55% versus 9.38% for the market, and the worst-ranked decile returns plus 6.92%. The spread from high to low is down to 5.63%. If we hadn't just seen the 1 month returns, this would still look pretty good. But what happens with the magic formula? The best ranked decile returns plus 18.43%, and the worst ranked decile returns plus 1.49%, a spread of almost 17% between best and worst. That's pretty good no matter how you look at it. Here's something else that's interesting. The worst return during those 10-plus years for following the Haugen strategy for 36 months straight, with annual turnover, was minus 43.1%. The worst 36-month period for the magic formula was plus 14.3%. Not only that, the magic formula used 69 fewer factors and a lot less math. Professor Haugen does not suggest buying the top 10% of his highest-rated stocks in one portfolio, or holding stocks for 1 year. Also, the losses for the worst 36-month return for the theoretical top 10% Haugen portfolio were similar to the overall market's loss during that period. The statistics listed were compiled for comparison purposes with the Magic Formula portfolio using only those stocks that were included in both the Haugen and Magic Formula over $1 billion universe. So, here's the point. The magic formula appears to perform very well. I think and hope it will continue to perform well in the future. I also hope that, just as Mark Twain aptly referred to golf as a good walk spoiled, perhaps someday the random walk will finally be considered spoiled as well. On second thought, who am I kidding? I hope it lives forever. Afterword to the 2010 edition. In my first book, I told the story about the peasant who has just been sentenced to death by the king. The peasant kneels before the king and says, "O great and glorious king, if you will only let me live for one more year, I pledge that I can teach the royal horse to talk." The king, figuring he has nothing to lose, grants the peasant his request. On the way out of the throne room, one of the royal guards pulls the relieved peasant aside and says, "Why in the world did you promise the king that you could teach his horse to talk? Surely you will fail, and the king will have you killed when the year is done." The peasant turns calmly to the guard and answers, "Well, a lot can happen in a year. Maybe the king will forget about me. Maybe the king will die. Maybe the horse will die. And if I get really lucky, in a year's time, maybe the horse will talk." Well, we've had 5 years since I wrote The Little Book That Beats the Market. I'm not sure whether we've gotten lucky or not, but a lot has happened. The stock market, as measured by the S&P 500 index, has first risen, then plummeted, and then recovered to roughly where we started 5 years ago, but still slightly lower than 10 years ago. The economy has seen a real estate bubble, a deep recession, and a partial recovery. With all this action in the markets and the economy, what have we learned in the past 5 years? Would I change anything from the original edition? Would I add anything? How did the magic formula perform during this difficult period? I'm glad you asked. Clearly, there are certain things that haven't changed. The principles on which the magic formula is based are still the same. Ben Graham taught us that leaving a large margin of safety when we invest is the most important concept in investing. In other words, figure out what something is worth, and then pay a lot less. Leaving a large spread between the value of a company and the price we pay will create a margin of safety and lead to long-term investment success. Graham's description of Mr. Market also remains particularly relevant and powerful. Markets are emotional. They often go to extremes of pessimism and optimism, and prices can, and often do, fluctuate wildly and significantly over short periods of time. We've certainly witnessed this many times over the last few years. Yet, what Graham pointed out is that the long-term value of a business can't possibly change as often and as drastically as changes in stock prices seem to imply. These emotional price swings, which sometimes produce stock prices at a big discount to the value of an underlying business, can be exploited by the intelligent investor. But these bargain opportunities will generally go to the investor who keeps the disparity between price and value in mind, rather than to those who make decisions based on emotion. The magic formula seeks to find a group of companies that, on average, are trading at a bargain price relative to their true value. It seeks that margin of safety. It does this by finding companies that earn a lot relative to the price we are paying. The more earnings we can get relative to the price we are paying, the better. The actual formula doesn't use simple earnings, and it doesn't use simple price. It adjusts for differences in debt and tax rates between companies. But the idea is exactly the same. The formula systematically ranks companies based upon how cheap they appear relative to their earnings. And since it is a formula, Mr. Market's emotions are left completely out of the equation. But the magic formula seeks to do something else before it decides which companies to buy. This part of the formula was inspired by Graham's most famous student, Warren Buffett. Buffett added a particularly powerful concept to Graham's original idea of seeking bargains through investing with a large margin of safety. This seemingly small improvement is perhaps one of the main reasons why Buffett has become one of the world's most successful investors. Essentially, Buffett, strongly influenced by his partner, Charlie Munger, said, "Buying a business at a bargain price is great. However, buying a good business at a bargain price is even better." Good businesses usually grow in value over time. Poor businesses can shrink in value. When buying a poor business, what appears at first to be a large margin of safety may shrink or even disappear completely as continued investment in the poor business, think Just Broccoli, actually destroys value over the years. For the good business, It is the opposite. Owning a business that can continually invest its earnings at a high rate of return, think the 50% returns on each new Jason's Gum Shop, can actually create additional value over the years and effectively increase the original margin of safety. The magic formula systematically looks for companies that are in good businesses. A business needs two things in order to operate: working capital and fixed assets. In the case of Jason's Gum Shops, the working capital needed in the business would include enough money to buy its inventory of gum. Its fixed assets would include the store displays and the store building itself. The formula simply seeks to determine how well each company can convert its investment in working capital and fixed assets into earnings. The more earnings a company can create relative to its investment in working capital and fixed assets, the higher the business is ranked by the magic formula. Once again, the formula does not look for just the cheapest companies it can find. It does not look for the best companies either. The magic formula tries to buy those companies that provide the best combination of being both cheap and good. This idea hasn't changed over the last 5 years. Stock prices clearly change over time. So do earnings. The formula takes these changes into account and then ranks companies against each other. Regardless of the market environment, there are always companies that rank toward the top of the list. While a typical stock market index is basically buying the average company at the average price, the magic formula seeks to buy above average companies, but only when they are available at below average prices. This investment strategy not only makes logical sense, as we'll examine again, it also seems to work over the long term. Unfortunately, it is the short term that gives us some problems. The magic formula has some serious flaws. The two most important are actually pretty big. First, often the formula doesn't work. One of the reasons I know this is the large number of emails I received after the first edition of the book was published. It's really tough to stick with a strategy that hasn't worked for 6 months, a year, or even longer. This is especially true for a strategy that suggests buying 20 or 30 companies selected by a computer. This is especially true for people who actually read a newspaper. Almost all of the companies selected by the formula are currently out of favor for one reason or another. The building boom is over. Healthcare reform will demolish earnings. The consumer is overextended. There are always great reasons not to own almost all of the stocks that are ranked highly on the magic formula list. In fact, many of the companies selected do not beat the market. Generally, only 50 to 60% of top-ranked stocks outperform the market in our tests. Yet, on average, the magic formula portfolios perform very well. Why is that? Think about it this way. If investors' expectations for the near future are fairly pessimistic for most of the companies selected by the magic formula, it's pretty hard to be disappointed. If some of the companies selected by the formula are expected to have lower earnings over the next few years, when those lower earnings actually come to pass, the share price might not fall very much. In many cases, the purchase price has already reflected those low expectations. On the other hand, if earnings are slightly or significantly better than the pessimistic expectations reflected in the stock's purchase price, it's often possible to get big outperformance over the coming years from those companies. So if we don't lose much from the companies whose earnings won't be great over the next few years, and we can make a lot from the companies that earn slightly or significantly more than our already low expectations, that's a pretty good deal. On average and over time, buying a portfolio of 20 or 30 magic formula stocks seems to provide returns that are quite satisfactory. It's just that often, over shorter time frames, and sometimes not so short, this strategy doesn't work. But here's an idea. Why don't we pick and choose from the highest-ranked stocks on the magic formula list rather than buying them all? Plenty of people wrote in over the last 5 years to suggest this change to the magic formula strategy. Maybe we can just eliminate the pharmaceutical companies that may get hurt from the changes under healthcare reform. or the consumer stocks that will suffer during a coming recession, or other companies that for one reason or another don't look so great right now. Of course, this does make perfect sense. The only problem is that we haven't yet found a good way to do it. Most of the companies selected by the magic formula are facing headwinds or uncertainty of some sort. Under the category of a little knowledge can be dangerous, it's usually hard to determine which of the companies will do a bit better than the generally low expectations built into their stock price. Instead, one alternative to picking and choosing might be to think of our strategy of choosing 20 or 30 magic formula stocks as being similar to how an insurance company operates. When an insurance company sells life insurance to 1,000 people of a certain age, they can hazard a pretty good guess as to how many of those people will not be fortunate enough to make it through the next year, to put it politely. The insurance company doesn't know particularly who among the 1,000 won't survive, but they can make a very good guess as to how many, on average, of those 1,000 won't. In the same way, when we purchase a portfolio of 20 or 30 top-ranked magic formula stocks, we don't know ahead of time which of those stocks will outperform the market. We just know that, on average, we are buying companies that are selling at a bargain price relative to their earnings, and that, on average, we are buying companies that can earn very high returns on capital. The end result is a portfolio that, on average, consists of above-average companies purchased at below-average prices. Even though this strategy seems to make sense over the long term, over the short term, Mr. Market may not cooperate. So, flaw number one is pretty clear. The magic formula strategy can underperform the market for years. But here's something important to remember. If the formula actually worked every month, every quarter, and every year, and then some fool decided to write a whole book about it, pretty much everyone would follow the formula. The prices of the stocks selected by the formula would be pushed higher, and eventually the formula would stop working. In a sense, the great thing about the formula is that it's not so great. To follow the formula, you are pretty much forced to buy an out-of-favor group of companies that no one who reads the newspaper would think of buying. Then you might, and often do, have to sit there for years while your portfolio underperforms the market. In short, if you could peek at my email inbox from the last 5 years, you too would have little concern that everyone will read or listen to the book, use the formula, and ruin it. It's very hard to continue with a strategy that doesn't work for years at a time. But we're also faced with flaw number two. In some ways, it's even bigger than flaw number one. While it may seem like an obvious point, it's also a problem that I sincerely wish I had emphasized more the first time. It's simply this. Beating the market is not the same thing as making money. Since we are buying a portfolio that is 100% long the stock market, if the stock market goes down, our portfolio may well go down too. If the market drops 40%, and we beat the market by losing only 38%, this is small consolation. While I firmly believe that for most people, an investment in the stock market should represent a substantial portion of their investment portfolio, how big that portion should be can vary widely. For some investors, the right number can be 40% of their total portfolio, while for others, it might be 80%. How much you should invest ought to be based on a number of considerations that are personal to you. But for the portion of your portfolio that you choose to invest in the stock market, I truly believe that the magic formula strategy remains one of your best options. Unfortunately, how much to invest in the stock market in the first place is a harder question. How much are you willing or able to lose before you panic out? There's no sense investing such a large portion of your assets in a long-term strategy if you can't take the pain when that strategy doesn't work out for a period of years. For the magic formula, tough times are inevitable. As we just discussed, the formula can underperform the market for years. It can also lose a lot of money if the market goes down. So let's take a look at the updated results, gains and losses of the magic formula, as shown in Table 8.1 in the PDF file that accompanies this program, and see what can happen even when a long-term strategy actually works. Despite all its flaws, the formula certainly seems to have worked well over the long term. Fortunately, I received many nice emails about this, too. But over the last 10 years, the results from our test of roughly the largest 1,000 companies in the United States, with market capitalizations over $1 billion, tell an interesting tale. This is one of those rare 10-year periods over which the S&P 500 index was actually down. According to our back tests, on the other hand, the formula managed to earn 255% during this same period, more than tripling our money. That's a 13.5% annualized return during a 10-year period when the S&P index was actually down 0.9% per year. But here's the thing. Even during this great 10-year period of outperformance by the formula, investors would still have had to suffer through plenty of poor performance. In fact, during those 10 years, there was a 34-month period when the formula underperformed the S&P index, and an additional non-overlapping 13-month period of underperformance. That's nearly 4 years of underperformance in a spectacular 10-year period, during which the formula outperformed the index by more than 14% per year. During a period when the formula outperforms the index by only 5 or 10% per year, imagine how patient magic formula investors will have to be. Of particular note, 2007 turned out to be an exceptionally poor year for our all-cap strategy. This strategy picked companies as small as $50 million in market capitalization. In 2007, this portfolio lost 8.8% during a period when the market, as measured by the S&P 500, was up 5.5%, and our magic formula portfolio selected from the largest 1,000 stocks earned 7.1%. Other than the usual caveats about the unpredictability of our magic formula portfolios over shorter time periods, 2007 was a particularly poor year for stocks considered value stocks, and for small stocks in general. In 2007, for example, the Small Cap Growth Index, as compiled by Russell, outperformed the Small Cap Value Index by 16.8%. And large cap stocks outperformed small cap stocks by 7.3%. This combination was particularly tough on our smaller cap portfolio of magic formula stocks. But here's something encouraging to consider. If someone told us that the market, as measured by the S&P 500 index, was going to be down over the next 10 years, and we believed them, we'd probably find something else to do with our money. After all, if we know somehow ahead of time that the market is going down, why invest? But in this case, even with that perfect information, we would have made the wrong decision. By following the magic formula and buying above-average companies at below-average prices, rather than buying average companies at average prices, as an index is designed to do, we were able to more than triple our money, even during a period when the market index was down. Obviously, this was a particularly good 10-year period for the formula, but in most 10-year periods, the market is up. Combining a more usual up market of, say, 5% per year, with outperformance of even 5 or 10%, can also lead to some pretty attractive overall returns. But why worry about the market going up in the first place? In the first edition of this book, I showed a chart of an experiment where we took roughly the largest 2,500 companies in the United States and then ranked all 2,500 according to the magic formula each month. We then divided all of those companies into deciles, 10% groups, based on their ranking, and we held each group for a year. So, the first group of 250 stocks was the highest ranked, followed by Group 2, the next best ranked 250 stocks, all the way down to Group 10, 250 companies the formula viewed as overpriced, but also in bad businesses. The results, updated through the end of 2009, appear in Table A.2 on the PDF file. Once again, Group 1 beats Group 2. Group 2 beats Group 3. Group 3 beats Group 4, continuing in order all the way down to Group 10, which actually loses a bit of money. Certainly, based on these results, the magic formula appears to be very powerful. It not only seems to work for the top-ranked stocks, but its rankings seem to have meaning throughout the total universe of stocks. The first version of this chart, published in the original edition, fascinated many people. My smartest students, some top money managers, and many intelligent individuals contacted me with a well-thought-out and logical suggestion. Why, they asked, don't you just buy the top decile stocks in Group 1 and sell short the bottom decile stocks in Group 10? Selling short is a way of betting that a stock will go down. In other words, why don't you make 15.4%, 15.2% from owning Group 1, plus 0.2% from being short Group 10, without taking any market risk at all? By being long and short at the same time, you can minimize your risks, still make lots of money, and you won't have to worry about whether the market goes up or down. First, I want to thank everyone for this perceptive and well-reasoned suggestion. But then I want to mention again one of the little flaws about the magic formula. The formula just isn't very cooperative. It doesn't always work. Sometimes the top-ranked stocks go down, at the same time, the bottom-ranked stocks are going up. Of course, over the long term, the formula appears to work in order, with Group 1 beating Group 10 by a wide margin. It's just that over the short term, Mr. Market can decide to go the other way. If we had actually tried this strategy of buying all of the Group 1 stocks and shorting all the Group 10 stocks over the last 22 years, we would have had a tough time of it. Instead of earning 15.4%, 15.2% from our longs in Group 1, and 0.2% from our shorts in Group 10, somewhere in the year 2000, we would have had a little problem. Okay, a big problem. Okay, we would have gone broke, losing 100% of our money. No matter how long our time horizon, the number zero does not compound very well. So, as grateful as I am for all the suggestions, it turns out that the formula just doesn't work and play well with others, or itself. On the other hand, there may be a piece of good news in all of this. If the formula was more cooperative, and it was easy to match a short side to our best-ranked stocks, our great returns might be more easily arbitraged away over time, through the buying of our top-ranked stocks and the selling of our worst-ranked stocks. If you don't know what arbitrage means, don't worry. Keep listening anyway. Instead, if we really wanted to figure out a long-short strategy that wouldn't blow up, we would probably have to make a number of compromises in our Group 1 stocks to better match the short-term movements of our short portfolio. Each time we compromised, by perhaps buying companies in the same industry or with the same volatility characteristics as our short portfolio, we would have to move away from owning the portfolio that represented the best combination of good businesses at bargain prices. Our short side would have to move away from companies that were in the worst businesses at the most expensive prices. The more we tried to match our longs and shorts, the further we would move away from owning our favorite magic formula stocks and shorting the companies the formula ranked least attractive. Long term, then, being uncooperative over the short term is likely a good characteristic. It is not easy to find an effective short-term hedging strategy for our favorite magic formula stocks. As a result, most of the benefits of the formula will continue to go to the much smaller group of investors who can maintain a true long-term horizon. One additional characteristic of the magic formula strategy is not necessarily good or bad. However, based on our updated backtests, it's probably helpful to keep this one in mind. Over the last 22 years, when comparing the performance of the Magic Formula portfolios during up months for the S&P 500 and down months for the same index, it turns out that much of the outperformance of our portfolios comes during the up months. On average, during this 22-year period, the Magic Formula portfolios captured 95% of the S&P 500's performance during down months and 140% of its performance during up months. All things considered, I'd probably rather have the strategy outperform by more when the market is down than when it's up. But I guess this is just another place where the magic formula is being uncooperative. Most people would expect value stocks, mainly because they are already considered cheap when purchased, to hold up much better in down markets and perhaps underperform a bit in up markets. This is probably true for stocks selling at low multiples of price-to-book value or price-to-sales. However, it's pretty clear that this has not been the case for the magic formula over the last 22 years. I can only speculate that since the magic formula is heavily earnings-based, during down markets, investors sense less protection from a company's high recent earnings than from high levels of assets or sales. In any event, losing a little less in down markets and making a lot more in up markets would still be a pretty good deal if this pattern should continue going forward. Another question often asked during the last 5 years is whether the magic formula would work outside the United States. After I wrote the original edition, a number of Wall Street firms did conduct some research into this question, showing that the formula worked in pretty much all foreign markets tested. But we did not conduct any of our own back tests for two reasons. First, much of the available historical stock market data from outside the United States is seriously flawed, and backtest results would not be reliable. It is helpful to know, however, that most historical studies over the last several decades involving classic, and less problematic to test, value characteristics, such as low price to earnings, low price to book value, and low price to sales, have proved equally effective in both the United States and international markets. But second, and perhaps more important, we are very confident that the principles behind the magic formula are universal. Buying above average companies at below average prices makes sense in all markets. We therefore have little doubt that the logic behind the magic formula will prove very powerful in developed and developing markets across the globe over the long term. Finally, I have to admit something pretty important. As simple as I've tried to make the process of following the magic formula strategy over the last 5 years, by creating a free website to obtain top-ranked stocks, providing simple purchase guidelines, outlining a disciplined and tax-efficient sell regimen, my kids and I have found it difficult to implement. As straightforward as it all sounds, there are still a lot of purchases to make, stocks to keep track of, timing to remember, and records to keep. Interestingly, over the last year or so, even after we created a new website to make the formula strategy easier for most people to follow, it turns out that almost everyone would still rather have someone else do it for them. This includes me and the kids. In fact, when given a choice, 97% of those using the new site have chosen to have the formula implemented for them rather than making some individualized choices and implementing it themselves. I can only say I understand this attitude much better now than when I wrote the book 5 years ago. But this may be a very good thing. As long as you have picked a long-term strategy that makes sense and you believe in, watching your stocks every day, every month, or even every quarter may not be a good idea. To the extent that you can leave some of those day-to-day or quarter-to-quarter decisions to someone else, you may be less likely to make a bad decision at just the wrong time. Even for those who choose to do it themselves, keeping a long-term perspective will continue to be the key to success. After the last few years, I believe as strongly as when I first wrote the little book that the magic formula strategy can play a very important role in the portion of your investment portfolio that you feel is appropriate to invest in the stock market. But it is a long-term strategy. It may not outperform the stock market for years. Even during a period of outperformance, it may lose money. Yet the formula makes sense. A disciplined strategy that buys above average companies at below average prices should work well over the long term. Sticking with it and getting to the long term is the challenge. I sincerely hope that some of the lessons learned and the understanding gained from this book will help you meet that challenge. I wish you all good luck, because I seriously doubt the horse will talk.
The Little Book That Still Beats the Market was written by Joel Greenblatt and read by Adam Gruber. It was recorded by Erica Weintraub. Editing and post-production by Hudson Sound. The associate producer was Louisa Solomon. The Little Book That Still Beats the Market was produced and directed by Karen Perlman. This has been a presentation of Simon & Schuster Audio.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.